Live from the 6th and Peabody Studio and across the OutKick Network, this is OutKick 360 with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Out of the gates and ready to go, OutKick 360 Tuesday edition is here from 6th and Peabody with Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine from Nashville and across the OutKick Network. We say good afternoon to you. A lot to get to across college football and the NFL. John McClain, he'll join us in an hour. We'll hit all the National Football League headlines off of the July 4th weekend. Gentlemen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hope everyone had a happy 4th. I see no injuries here, which is nice. No firework casualties, which is always a good thing. We had a big time with the Withrow household. Paul, hope you did as well.
Lots of action for 2 days, and then a third day of kind of
rested.
Dead rest. Yeah. So Simon out of the house, got down to Florida now. So we're going finally to Top Gun
tonight. Oh, good.
So after a Minions movie, a Sounds game, a NSC game, which really gave me a proud feeling about all there is to do in Nashville, Top Gun, finally, tonight. I'll catch up to everybody.
Yeah, you may be sitting next to people that have seen it for a third or fourth time.
Bobby Carpenter may be there.
Well, a relatively small theater now that you plot out your seats in advance, so we're back row of a small theater, dead middle. So, I'd like to be a row or two ahead, but not displeased. Had good seats for Minions, had good seats for the Sounds. There is not a bad seat, I'm telling you, in this Geodis Park for the soccer. We were the highest we've been. It's perfect. You see everything laid out in front of you. It's a phenomenal facility. You guys need to get out there.
Oh, I've heard once you're inside, it's great.
How was
getting there
is tough.
Yeah. I guess they knew that going in, but it's not a fun park to attend.
I presume it'll get better, but right now you just have to be willing to walk.
How was the crowd?
It was about 27 and change, so it seats 30. So I'm surprised, quite frankly, it's not sold out every game, especially a game like that. It was a 7:30 start on July 3rd of July 4th weekend. But, see where the empties are or end zone of the sideline. So it's always a spirited crowd. Everybody seems like they're having a great time. They blew a 2-0 lead, so it feels like a loss. Ties can feel like a win if you come back, or a loss if you blow the lead. It definitely felt like a loss.
Chad, did you have any Roman candle wars or anything at the Withrow family gathering?
No, we had one minor injury on Sunday night. We had sparklers out, and we were playing a game where we would chase each other with the sparklers. And Lucy, my 2-year-old, took off from the sparkler when I was chasing her, and I saw the forward momentum going a little too fast in the sidewalk, and she ate it and skinned up both knees pretty bad. And Angie was kind of getting something else ready, and I'm like, Angie, she's hurt pretty bad. Like, she was screaming. Usually we just kind of give it a beat, and they'll be okay. I'm like, I think there's going to be some blood on this one.
There will be
and
blood.
And sure enough, there was a little bit of blood on the knee, nothing big.
Some light gravel
got it cleaned
and strawberry.
Up. Yeah, got it cleaned up. Yeah. Got the Band-Aid on it, and everything was fine. Yesterday, I went to my cousin Trent's place in College Grove, and he's got a huge spread. He basically lives on a farm. He's got a pool.
The pond's good for you.
Old vehicles. He's got a 1968 Ford F-100 he's restoring. He's got an old blue, just like the blue Bronco in Top Gun Maverick, that Goose
there
hops out of.
He spoiled the whole thing for me.
It's the same exact vehicle that he hops out of. He's got that, and we played kickball. We played in the pool all day. My older cousin said at the end of the day, he said, Chad, I really enjoyed watching you be 11 years old again today, because I watch you out here playing with these kids, and I'm reminded of you at 11 doing the exact same thing. Now, the problem is the recovery is not like me at 11. So I felt it last night, feeling a little bit today. I'll feel more of it tomorrow.
Second day soreness.
I mean, I spent, there was a 7-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 7-year-old, not my daughter being one of them, another 7-year-old, that were all taking turns shooting there's a pool basketball hoop, shooting towards the pool hoop by jumping off the opposite side into the water. And I sat there, and either the game was I would rebound it, or if it was close enough, I'd try to get the alley-oop and tip it in and jump up. I did that for probably 45 straight minutes, throwing the ball back to them, rebounding every single one. And now I have a blister on the bottom of my left big toe from launching off the bottom of the pool.
You're limping.
Over and over. Not yet.
Aging
but
sucks.
Probably, you know, by tomorrow I'll be limping.
How about
but
you,
it was fun. It was worth it.
Well, we had no plans going into the weekend. We had a nice grill out last night, and the neighborhood itself put on such good shows. When I say good fireworks shows, like legit fireworks, not some that are barely getting over the rooftops here. These were bombs over Baghdad, and especially next door, it was phenomenal. So we didn't have to do very much. But last night, I went out, had the TV on outside, threw on some baseball, got the FanDuel app going, had the grill out going, and watched fireworks in about three or four different directions.
That's a very relaxed way to do it.
It was perfect.
We went across the street to neighbors who put on a pretty good 20-minute show, Simon and I, in their backyard. Teresa stayed home with the dogs, imagining their panic, which wasn't as bad. The little one's fine. Finley hears a lot less, so I think he's less stressed, though he still, I'm sure, appreciated her presence.
I don't know about you guys. Fireworks are so expensive.
Yeah.
They're even more expensive this year.
But loud.
We went, and I thank my cousin and his wife over and over again. And my cousin's right around my age. So we're now of the generation where we're trying to do everything for our parents so they can sit in lounge chairs and watch the grandkids and great-grandkids play. Because at one point, it was our parents' generation, you know, buying the watermelon, putting the cookout on. It was my house that hosted my property every 4th of July, buying all the fireworks. So we have a family member who owns a fireworks stand about an hour and a half away. And one family member goes and gets a discount with them and buys all the fireworks. I probably gave a small amount. Like, all of my generation would pitch in, I think. But I gave $100 to my cousin. And I'm thinking, you know, that's not a small amount of money, but it's not some huge investment. But I gave it to him. I said, hey, here's just a little help for the fireworks since you guys put it all together. And then my other cousin that's older, who has a lot more money than me, walked up and I saw him hand a wad of money to them as well. I'm thinking, well, you know, Brad just gave a lot more money than Chad did. That's the thing that a Chad would do in this situation would be give less. But even giving the $100, like, I watch fireworks. And I am from the South. I love the 4th of July. I love most everything about it. I do not get the intrigue with fireworks to the extent that you're going to go and spend over $1,000, $2,000 on fireworks. Because while what we had was really good, the displays that we had, it lasted about 12 minutes, you know, start to finish.
That's pretty good, though.
And if but I'm guessing this was probably $2,400 worth of fireworks.
A minute. Yeah, $200 a minute.
If I spent money on all of that and I just dropped $2,400 on 10 minutes of fireworks and what I saw, I would be devastated.
Also, like Hutt's
like my $100 thing is like, man, I could have bet that on FanDuel. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. Would have been a lot more enjoyable, you know, seeing if I could have made a lot of money off of it. But I like them. I don't understand just going nuts over them. And Hutton, I think you made the right play. Allow everyone else to put on the firework display for you.
I wasn't even expecting
sit
that,
there
though.
And
just,
enjoy them.
It was better last night and the night before than the three previous July 4th we've spent there or in that neighborhood. They went all out. Maybe some new people have moved in and they wanted to up the ante a bit. But I thoroughly enjoyed hanging outside and watching. And you go upstairs. You can watch from one of the big windows overlooking the majority of the neighborhood in a different direction.
Chad, cool. That's the thing that you're saying. Like, if yours didn't, I don't know what it was like in the neighborhood that you were at, but if yours aren't going off, if your $2,400 relatives aren't doing that, you could go like this. And turn your head towards the next yard and watch those.
Yeah, in our neighborhood, we weren't there this year for it. We're at my cousin's, but they do a huge firework display that's really well done, and the HOA pays for it. So they have a big HOA, you know, and it's a good way to meet neighbors. There's a lot of little kids that'll be there around the pool, you know, in that area watching the fireworks. We have a roundabout in the middle of our neighborhood, and it's in the middle of the roundabout. They fire off the fireworks, which is pretty cool and a great way to meet a lot of different people. Driving back last night, though, we're going down 840, driving kind of the back way, you know, through Murfreesboro from like Williamson County through Murfreesboro to Glayville, Tennessee, past the Super Speedway. And I mean, either direction. It's probably 9:30 at night. It is. It's like the scene in Sandlot where they have the one night game of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm telling both my daughters, like, look right, look left. Because Lucy was fascinated with seeing a purple firework. She was trying to find purple fireworks the whole time. It's her favorite color.
It's cute.
So she's looking out the left side of the window looking for purple fireworks. But, I mean, it's everywhere. And it's so flat in that part of Middle Tennessee also. You can see fireworks left and right. It was really cool.
Here's one thing I didn't find very majestic about July 4th. And, Hutt, I read your baseball column. I know we'll talk about it later. But you connect July 4th to baseball as a kid. And I had a restful July 4th, as I said, after a very busy second and third. And so one of the things I wanted to do yesterday was be in my comfortable chair watching my team. Yanks didn't play on July 4th. Yanks didn't play on Memorial Day. I do not understand.
They had a doubleheader too, didn't they?
They had a doubleheader the day before. So I don't understand how it's a travel day or day off. I mean, I like that they get days off, but I think everybody's got to play on the holiday.
I thought they did.
I mean, you've got to be able to watch your team on Memorial Day and on the 4th of July for people who, I don't know. I mean, I want to watch them on any day, you know, a day game in particular, where you have a chance to watch them play during the day. And I go on FanDuel's where I check, you know, or the Score is my app where I check scores, and I go to double check, and they're not on there. And I'm like, you know, I wanted to see them rebound from the night before, and there's nothing. They had a doubleheader, I think, Saturday, not Sunday.
This is completely separate of Hutton's piece that we'll discuss later on baseball of yesteryear versus baseball today and marketability. But you know what is not marketable? Those god-awful American-themed hats in jerseys they were wearing across baseball yesterday.
Well, I get to not see them in those. That was a relief.
I was watching Braves Cardinals last night, and some of that stuff is just awful. Like, I don't know who. I know people will buy anything that's a novelty item, but I feel like you could package it in a very classic, clean look and put something on the side with the American flag or whatever for a 4th of July uniform slash hat. And sell a lot more of those than what we saw across baseball.
I did not give my 12-year-old test on that because that's who it's marketed for. But usually I try to see if it's a thumbs up or thumbs down for him. I did not ask, but I can't imagine he would like that hat. That's an ugly hat.
So the Yankees spent their July 4th sitting in Pittsburgh, where yeah. I believe the Pirates were playing, but they were not. They were waiting on their series to begin today. And
it's weird.
DJ LeMahieu was like, yeah, that's exactly what he said. He's like, it's just weird. It feels like we should be playing. You're supposed to play on the 4th of July. I was very surprised when I saw the schedule. But the New York Post points out that they have played 20 games in 20 days.
Well, that's fine.
So they're not
give them a day off.
Well, the
doubleheader. Today is the day
the doubleheader is the odd part for me is they crammed it in and then had another game on Sunday.
But the Guardians, I think, played yesterday. My brother, coincidentally, is in Cleveland. My oldest brother's making a Kuharsky sentimentality tour. He's going all the places he lived and grew up and everything. So he was in Cleveland, and he went to see the Yankees just happened to be in Cleveland. So he saw Yankees-Cleveland Sunday afternoon. I told him he witnessed a real rarity, the Yankees losing. But he sent me a picture from where from his seats.
How about the Astros with two back-to-back games with walk-offs over the July 4th weekend?
That's great.
The Astros are scaring me a little bit. And the Yankees, when they get to the trade deadline, can't think they're okay because they got two outfielders who do not hit. And you cannot have, no matter how good you are, two players in your lineup who do not hit.
And be glad you weren't in Atlanta.
I say this with all respect, Paul. The way your team is playing right now, I don't think you are allowed to get nervous about anything until actual postseason baseball
starts.
Well,
the way they played against the Astros.
You are fine until the playoff. Then you can worry all you want about the Astros. Let's just put it neutral for the rest of this dominant
regular season.
You
understand what I'm saying. They're playing dominant baseball, but against the Astros, they looked human. And so I'm thinking ahead. They're going to probably play the Astros in the playoffs, and I'm a little nervous about the great season coming apart against that damn team that's been a nemesis for them.
Look, I say this because of the nature of baseball. You know, we see it all the time. Braves look bad against the Dodgers in the regular season, too. Dominated them in the postseason.
Yeah, things break a different way.
I mean, it's what's fun about the game and what's maddening at times is it can be you get hot at the right time, a couple of role players step up and have dominant series. A starting pitcher or two just plays out of their mind, and you're going to be fine. But the great news of the Yankees is you don't have to have any of that happen. Just keep playing. Play the way you are right now. You'll be just fine.
Everybody wants Benintendi. So I think that's the prevailing move. Joey Gallo's just got to be cut. I mean, I'd rather they bring up Andujar from the minors and just give it to him. But Joey Gallo, in his whole time, last year and this year, just does not hit. I don't understand why they continue to roll him up.
Chad, be glad you did not make the trek to Atlanta, where they had, what, a two-hour rain delay?
I was leaving my cousin's house at 9:15. I saw the Braves were up 6-1 in the top of the fifth. And I get home, and I keep refreshing my feed on my score app because I'm thinking, oh, is my internet not picking up? It still says top of the fifth, 6-1. This is an hour and a half later. And then I turn on the TV and see weather delay. They're showing the Braves ring ceremony from earlier this season. And it says it will start back at approximately, I want to say it was a 10:30 Eastern time is when it started back.
I don't know about you guys. I am not one to wait out a rain delay. No. Even if I had gone to Atlanta, but on I would July be at 4th, Papa Dope.
You're looking at like the fireworks after you're building up to that. And then you have the rain delay where they resume at like 10 o'clock Eastern. And then the Cardinals came out and hit back-to-back solo home runs.
Well, so I bet on the Cardinals' money line during the long delay at 6-1, just on a flyer, because it's like plus 5,700 or something to win the game. And I'm thinking, well, the starter's got to come out now.
Whole new game.
It's going to be a bullpen game. Who knows what will happen? Who's going to be more motivated coming out of this line? And then I saw the two home runs. I'm thinking, all right, I might be on to something here. And the odds shifted big time. Braves held on and won. But I turned it over
betting
in time
against this team
to see them. It's called hedging your happiness. I turned it over and I saw the Braves like joking around in the dugout, getting ready to go back out for the game. And I'm like, man, this thing is going to end at like 1 a.m. or 12:30 Eastern time in Atlanta. But I mean, they were in good spirits. It was Matt Olson and Acuna throwing sunflower seeds at each other and laughing about something before they took the field again.
I mean, you can't help, but you got to stay upbeat because you ain't getting the hell out of there. So what's your choice? You be miserable?
Look, I'm not going to, they're playing baseball for a lot of money for a living. I'm not going to throw a pity
party
for them.
But it's got to suck.
But yeah, I'm also watching it, just a human being in me thinking, that's a long time to just go in and wait and then go back out there and get it going
again. Well, the night before.
To play five more innings or four more innings.
The day before, the Cardinals just got into town, right?
The Braves were in Cincinnati. The Cardinals were somewhere else.
And the Cardinals, I think, got in at like 11 o'clock Eastern the night before. And then they had the long delay afterwards and had not started well. But then they came out and were on fire from the plate, didn't win. But the Braves were able to hang on to a game they should have and would have easily won. At one point, FanDuel had it up at like -6.5, -7.5 runs. For Atlanta.
Go back to the Yanks Pirates just for a second. Got to be the record combination size for a center fielder against a shortstop in history, right? They got that 6'7 guy
O'Neal
playing shortstop
Cruz.
Against Judge. Finally, it will be the opposite of the Altuve Judge picture. These guys will actually look eye to eye.
By the way, O'Neal Cruz, great discussion fodder for what we're going to talk about later with your piece.
Oh, here's a ridiculous
thing.
This
is someone who needs to be mimicked by little kids with his batting stance at 6'7".
So I was at the Sounds, and the Sounds played Indianapolis. Indianapolis, I guess, has a long history being the Indians. So they're the Indianapolis Indians. But they wear Pirates helmets, and they're affiliated with the Pirates.
Well, I saw that.
That's bizarre.
I saw that with the Sounds, too, and I'm thinking, how did the Cleveland Indians have to change their name and not the Indianapolis Indians?
Yeah. Also, how do the Pirates go along with the team being named the Indians?
They got to keep it.
How the Pirates sponsoring a team that's called the Indians?
It's further proof that minor league affiliation system is broken.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing's just...
That's weird.
So
you want guys
helmets?
Wearing Indians jerseys with the P, a black helmet with the P
could
on
they not, could they not afford their own like gear and stuff? So it's like a...
yeah, you wear last year's
like a middle
stuff.
School locally?
I don't know. It
getting
was
free
weird.
Equipment to practice.
I kept looking at it thinking, like, it is weird.
It's like Major League. Cleveland still has a team when he's on the Indians. Like,
we were screaming at a guy.
Everything. It's great.
So the Sounds were down 8-3 after a terrible second inning, and they rallied back. And we were screaming at a guy. They had two on, and we're screaming. He's a big bopper, but he's against a huge shift. And Simon and I are screaming at him, bunt! Bunt to third! They're giving you first base! He hits a two-run homer to give him the lead and ultimately win
crushed.
The game. We're like, all right, that'll beat the shift also.
I'd have loved the guy yelled at you. Yeah, there's your bunt for you. I got your bunt right here.
I tell him to bunt every time.
We come out of the July 4th weekend growing. The Outkick Network, Outkick 360, excited to begin our partnership with 95.5 The Fan and 1300 AM in Marion and Carbondale, Illinois.
Excellent.
We say hello to everyone in Southern Illinois, home of the Chicago Cubs, among a plethora of other sports lineups, including Outkick 360, day number one for us today on 95.5 The Fan and 1300 AM. Also, Dan Patrick, Colin Cowherd, and much more. Shout out to Dana Withers, Chris Hugo for making this happen. Jeff, the engineer, who's been working nonstop to make sure today's launch went off without a hitch. Thanks to all the hard work and effort there, and we're excited to be a part of it. For everyone listening, you can join us on Twitter at Outkick360, and we say hello to you officially today on July the 5th.
Excited to get going. Excited to add the radio affiliate network. It's been a great time getting to know Dana Withers and her entire team with Chris Hugo there and getting this thing done. And I'm excited. Carbondale, Illinois, also home of the Southern Illinois Salukis. That's a sneaky, good basketball program. You got to watch out for Southern Illinois there in Carbondale. So we're excited to be on those great stations.
Welcome.
And the surrounding area, again, daily 2 to 5 is where you'll be able to find Outkick 360 on 95.5 The Fan and 1300 AM. Coming up, we discuss what's next for the SEC. We will dive into from there what it means for the Big Ten and the Big 12 and the additions the Big 12 are debating on adding and the news that we'll be following a lot throughout the week. That's coming up. First, though, Outkick 360, excited to partner with Aurora Nutriscience and VidaLifeScience.com. VidaLifeScience.com is where you can see more information about their great supplements they offer. Vitamin C, vitamin D3, glutathione, and so much more. 15% discount for Outkick 360 season ticket holders. You go to VitaLifeScience.com, type in Outkick 360, hit submit, and you've got your 15% off on the order. Typical pills, capsules, not well absorbed. But here's Aurora Nutriscience. Unique, cutting-edge, nutritional, and absorbable supplements encapsulated in liposomes, and that ensures greater absorption in the body's bloodstream. Aurora supplements absorbed in the bloodstream through the GI tract, ensuring it's not wasted like a typical capsule or pill. Visit VitaLifeScience.com for more info. 15% off with the code OUTKICK360 at VitaLifeScience, V-I-D-A, LifeScience.com. Over the weekend, it was all quiet on the East Coastal area, Eastern area of the United States for college football, specifically the ACC. But the Pac-12 is being pillaged. The Big 12, with a report this morning through Dennis Dodd, is where I first saw this come down. The Big 12 is in deep discussions to add six teams to their conference. The six teams include Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, Oregon, Utah, and Washington. So I immediately look at this and think, well, they're now taking what they can from the Pac-12. I immediately thought, Chad, of what we discussed last week of the rumors that were swirling about Oregon and Washington being a package and how the Big Ten was interested in that as well. And in fact, I believe the rumors were we would hear something early this week about Oregon and Washington and potentially the Big Ten to accompany USC, UCLA. We discussed the legislation that they were debating out on the Pac-12, specifically the state of Oregon, with Oregon and Oregon State. And I also thought of, where is Stanford and Cal in this? And if you're the Big Ten, are you going immediately after Stanford and Cal as the next pairing to add to your conference? If, in fact, Dennis Dodd is, and he's accurate, if, in fact, this comes to fruition where you see the Big 12 add these six schools, Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, Oregon, Utah, and Washington.
This is a lot different. I mean, obviously, the SEC comes out and it doesn't say we're courting so-and-so. Comes out and says, hey, Texas and Oklahoma are coming to us. And then Pac-12 in a slightly smaller but awfully big move says, hey, USC and UCLA are coming to our conference. Then you have this movement. We would like very much for these six schools to come join us. We're going to court them hard. That's a much different tone and advancement, right? Two big conferences says, hey, we've got these two big boys, and we've got these two big boys. And then another conference says, it sounds to me a mousy, like, we're going to try to get these six schools very hard.
So the Pac-12 this morning, the report came out that they have upped their timetable to renegotiate their television rights, which is horrendous, where Larry Scott completely screwed over the conference.
How's it going to get any better now?
With what happened. So they're trying to do that. And then right after that, the Dennis Dodd report comes out about they're getting gutted. So they're already in front of the Big 12 for the next TV rights deal. But now they're even further ahead of them. But what are they negotiating with if those teams are now leaving the conference? And here's the part of this I don't understand. And I've written a piece that will be on OutKick.com tomorrow about what I think the SEC and Big Ten should do. And this is not me agreeing with any of this. I hate most of this. But I also acknowledge that this is the direction it's going. You can't stop the future. And those in power want to stay in power. And the rich always want to get richer. These are universal truths in America and throughout the world. So they're going to keep doing this. Well, the two most powerful brands and conferences are the Big Ten and the SEC. They are set to make the most money and provide the most security for schools. So why on earth are you leaving for the Big 12 right now? I think that's, if I'm advising these schools, I think it's dumb. I understand the Pac-12 is not in a great spot right now, but I'm not just taking the Big 12's offer and going. If I'm in the ACC or the Pac-12, I'm not rushing to any other conference except the Big Ten or the SEC. If they come calling, I do everything in my power to go. I'm holding out and waiting to see what happens if it's the Big 12 courting me. Now, if you're Fresno State, Boise State, San Diego State, Appalachian State, name all these programs all across the country that aren't in any Power 5 conference right now, then yeah, you jump at the moment the Big 12 or the Pac-12 calls. But if I'm a school and the ACC, the Pac-12, or the Big 12 are trying to recruit me and I'm currently in a Power 5 situation, I'm not in a big hurry. Now, the first thing I thought of when I saw this preliminary report about the Big 12 wanting these schools was it's a leverage play. This is Washington and Oregon wanting to get into the Big 10. Hey, we've got other suitors also. Big 12's making a move. This could also be in part with some of these programs a move to try to up themselves to the Big Ten or the SEC. So we'll see how it plays out. I just don't know why anyone would be in a huge rush to join the Big 12 right now.
And why
I understand why you'd want to join the Big Ten or the SEC. I think you hold off a bit on the Big 12.
And why would a TV network be anxious to negotiate with the Pac-12 right now?
Well, I think a TV network would rather see a merger of the two conferences. Yeah. Which is what I think that's also in play here. The Big 12 leverages enough schools to be willing to bolt that you then go to the conference itself and say, hey, our contract's up. Yours is too. Let's
become the third big conference.
Let's join forces and let's legitimately try to raise the price tag on our suitors. You're talking to so-and-so. We're talking to Fox. And you try to combine the negotiations and you're off and rolling much more long-term than where they are right now. And if I'm Oregon, if I'm Washington, not only if it's a leverage play for the Big Ten, I'm also trying to ensure that when the Pac-12 is no more, I'm not with them. I'm not on the sinking ship. The Big 12 is as much a life raft for them as it is anything else when you consider where the Pac-12 is headed right now and how we were discussing where the Big 12 was headed 12 months ago.
What do we think's better for the sport? That scenario where you have a third player and you have three mega conferences, or keep going towards the two mega conferences?
I think what's best for first off, on that report about the TV renegotiation for the Pac-12, you leaked that to try to keep your current schools from jumping.
Yeah,
guys, hold off. I'm going to get a big deal done. George Klievikoff is going in and saying, we're going to make this happen for you. Don't bolt just yet. So you're trying to kind of keep everyone on the ship. I think the best scenario for college football would be a straight merger between Big 12 and Pac-12, and then for Notre Dame to go ahead and go all in with the ACC, and probably West Virginia geographically to break off from the Big 12 and join the ACC, which would solidify that conference. And then you have a Big Four at that point. And not worry about a Power Five. And you've got four major conference players that all contribute to an expanded playoff system. And you get to keep things a little bit more the way, you know, we like them. If you're a traditionalist with a sport, or you've been watching things the last, you know, in some cases 20 years, in some cases 100 years with a conference, and you want to keep those things the same. And then you have some sort of conglomerate Big 12, Pac-12 that's now the West Conference or whatever you want to call it, and it's this mega conference of all these schools when they combine.
I didn't mean to leave the ACC out, but you're right in that it needs something to amp itself up a little bit. Notre Dame, sure.
Yeah, I mentioned that last week. But Notre Dame with Josh Pate, I brought up the one play the ACC and Jim Phillips could make that would just have everyone shut up about any movement from their conference is to add the Irish. But otherwise, they're always going to be mentioned as last. Schools that are going to be jumping ship rather than staying on board.
But unless they just give them the world, which is a much bigger percentage of the share of conference revenue,
they're going to lose out.
Notre Dame's
Big
not
Ten.
Going to jump because they can hold out and get a good deal from the Big Ten or the SEC.
Yeah, the
which
Big
can
Ten
put them in a better spot.
It's rumored that the Big Ten could give them $80 million a year to join. And right now, so whenever USC and UCLA left, they went from it was a $12 million loss in annual revenue for projections for the Pac-12 per team per year just by losing USC and UCLA. There are those within the sports business angle in front that say on the new TV contract, if you combine forces, teams could get around $50 million each per year on a renegotiated new television/streaming contract if they played this right. So there's money to be had versus money to be lost if you stay put and do nothing. The Pac-12 is trying to do something with the Big 12. We were mentioning last year at this time that the Pac-12 was on the clock and they should be calling up the Big 12. We just lost teams trying to do some type of merger. And because they've waited on these television contracts to expire, now the Big 10, who can negotiate with Amazon and Apple and others, and they've already got, they still have Fox on board. They still have other television contracts. CBS is in the mix as well. They can now add on an additional platform and make even more money to spread their wealth around for their availability of games and teams and rivalries. They can put it on many different networks and platforms the way they've written out this new television deal.
I just got word my column's going to drop in 20 minutes, actually, with all this news of what SEC and Big Ten should do. To answer your question, Paul, about what's best for the sport, the issue with that is the Big Ten and the SEC don't care about what's best for the sport.
No, I know.
They are charged with looking after themselves. So in this, it's this amped up, supercharged world of if I don't do it, they will. Paranoia. That's now starting to take hold. Those conferences are going to look out for numero uno. So in doing so, they're going to create a system that's going to be profitable, sustainable, and it's going to end up being okay for every school that's in that boat in those two conferences. But I think it will slowly destroy those who don't get in. Now, what the Big 12 is attempting, you know, if they pull this off, I think they're going to sustain. You know, they're going to be fine adding those programs. They're going to remain a player. They're not going to be Big Ten. They're not going to be SEC level. But a straight merger between the two would keep them in contention for that. So that part of it's going to be interesting. I still don't. It's not just survival for the Big Ten and the SEC. They have raised their profile to a level that, I mean, they just got Oklahoma and Texas and then USC and UCLA. Those are two big prizes to bring in. So if Notre Dame jumps into either one of those conferences, that's the biggest one left out there. It's not just about survival now for those conferences. It's about let's run the sport. Let's run college sports. Let's be the ones that we're never going to have to worry about money. I think that's where they're headed.
It's not there are a lot of things I don't like about the structure of college football, but I think if you go all the way to the NFL, like we've talked about, AFC, NFC thing, you take away a lot of the things that are good about it and that make it different, and you might regret it after the fact. Not that they're, of course, they're targeting money first and foremost.
I think it's a huge mistake for the fan out there to mimic the NFL if you're college football.
Too much.
But here's
mimic it some.
But Greg Sankey and Kevin Warren, you would be a fool not to mimic the NFL from a money standpoint. The NFL is king when it comes to money and how they negotiate their television deals. So if you are a business person, you're looking at it saying, why would we not mimic the NFL and what they're doing? But that can run contrary to the fans of your sport that have helped build the sport. Now, I also look at this, and with my piece even, I'm looking at all the possible matchups within a conference if it moves to 24 teams in a mega conference, and I'm thinking, there's a lot of really good college football to be played amongst these teams, and new and exciting matchups we wouldn't normally see if these teams are now in the conference.
Also have to keep in mind,
but it's also, it runs contrary to the tradition of the sport.
Yeah, and it's not going to be as frequent because it's not a 17-game schedule. You know, NFL, you don't see some matchups for 8 years, right? But it's still a 17-game schedule where you see a lot more. And in college, they're not going to come around quite as often. And I think we're going to miss them.
So the other thing to consider is they're already making a ton of money that we know off the of the contracts. The college football playoff is separate from the NCAA. The college football playoff contract expires with ESPN in 2025, but after that you don't need a unanimous vote to then expand the college football playoff. All of these television contracts are up then too. So if you think about why all of this is happening now and why the SEC, even though they're about to go into their ESPN deal, why the Big Ten is acquiring USC and UCLA, and why the Pac-12 and Big 12 need to move and move fast, and who knows what happens with the ACC, they're going to get the expansion that they want in the playoff system. And whether or not that's a part of the NCAA or not, meaning all of the conferences, there will be a have and the have-nots on crowning the national champion as we view it, right? Second,
what kind of vote do you need?
Well, right now, you've got to have all the presidents and ADs on board with moving forward to expand the commissioners, rather, with moving forward to expand the playoff. And that's why we've seen all the bickering back and forth between guys like Greg Sankey and Jim Phillips and others, and de facto commissioners who are, you know, in or out. And Kevin Warren, too, is also looking at things and scoping things out, trying to figure out what's the SEC and ESPN trying to figure out long-term that we're either going to be a part of or not be a part of, and how do we get our share, right? How does Notre Dame factor into that in 2025? Now, there would be, to me, some leverage in making sure that they're attached some way. There would be some monetary gain for the college football playoff moving forward. And in this question, I'm saying, I'm posing the idea that there's no longer a Power Five, and we're not funneling conference champions per se to the playoff itself based on a system that we have in place. I'm looking at it from a separate angle where you have 2, 3, 4 power conferences, and then you have the rest of college football. And it would be the 2, 3, 4 power conferences that are going to funnel teams through their own semifinals to the college football playoff. That's how I would structure it. And is Notre Dame a part of that or not? If they are, someone's going to benefit from it other than just Notre Dame, someone being a conference.
Yeah.
That's a huge – and also consider the NCAA runs March Madness. They're a $1 billion company and barely even get money from the college football playoff compared to March Madness. In this scenario, you've got Sankey and Warren and whoever else wants to join – saying we're going to start our own, and we're going to make the March a profit and television numbers, if not equal, we're going to take a big chunk out of it, and we're going to have our own national championship based on the schools we have competing.
The basketball thing will hurt. The change will hurt a little bit because the Cinderella element's a big deal in March Madness. The Cinderella element's nothing in the college football playoff, and that's where I think you can ultimately pressure Notre Dame a little bit, because as as your conferences grow, your schedules are going to grow, and where's Notre Dame going to find its games eventually?
Yeah, Notre Dame's going to be a part of it based on the eyeballs they bring to the product. There's not, I don't think there's a scenario where the SEC, the Big Ten, and anyone else involved would not want Notre Dame on their schedule and involved in their postseason.
Absolutely.
But the question is, which conference is it benefiting the most, and how do they go about structuring that? That's another fascinating angle that I'm sure the Big Ten, first and foremost, is trying to figure out.
I wonder if, I mean, it's probably unwise to discount the SEC in that.
Yeah, I mean,
right? I mean, they're the biggest and the baddest.
Or the ACC. Like, they're by getting Notre Dame, you also get NBC. You get Peacock. Like, you get all of this access that they have through their own private television agreement. And they're in no rush. As Josh Pate pointed out, it's not like they have a deadline like some of these other conferences. Coming up, we hit some more headlines. We've got John McClain in less than 15 minutes on Outkick 360. John McClain coming up, NFL headlines in 8 minutes. Outkick 360 rolls on from 6th and Peabody with Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine. Always love when John is on. Plenty to chat about across the NFL as we're, what, 3 weeks away from really diving into training camp?
26.
I really think that once you get to the 4th of July, the official countdown to football season starts.
Yeah.
Because you're just a few weeks, 2-3 weeks away from training camp, and then
media days for
nonstop.
SEC is happening in 2 weeks.
Yep.
Yeah. We're here. We're here. Yesterday, Joey Chestnut doesn't reset his own record, his world record for hot dogs in 10 minutes. It was previously set last year by him, I think 76. Is the record. Yesterday, he ate 64, I think, 63 or 64.
He had 63.
Choked out a guy, too.
Yeah. And why do you go that far if you're just crushing everyone? If 63 wins the title, why do you go to, what would you say, the year before, 97 or whatever it was?
No,
70-something?
76. He's trying to set the world record again.
His own world record.
Yes.
Amazing.
You were once a competitor in this field.
Yeah, not to his level. I've also never had to take down a protester during any competition.
Man, and he had you could tell Joey Chestnut has choked out a man before. I mean, he took this guy down fast.
He's also on crutches. What's up?
I don't know what happened to his leg.
There's a darkness in Joey Chestnut that we saw come out yesterday, and I'm here for it. You're right. I mean, I saw a guy that this guy's either worked as a bouncer before.
Something.
Or he's thrown hands before. I mean, you don't grab someone with that level of force and take them down. And there was a look in his eye like he was having PTSD from something. I thought he was about to pull a knife out of
the sock. He did a double take,
and
he's like, oh, this guy's protesting something, and then puts him in a chokehold, and that guy just dropped.
Immediately.
Yes. And then went right back to scarfing down hot dogs. The way that they announce these other guys, number two in the world or whatever. I was watching the highlights on ESPN last night. They're announcing number two in the world. And his feats are amazing. Like he's won head to head against Chestnut 3 or 4 times, maybe more than that throughout his career, eating different things, not hot dogs. But he goes up there and has no chance against Joey Chestnut. Who is the main focus? The introduction for him is even on a grander stage than anyone else. And it's all free pub for the hot dog company.
Nathan's Hot Dogs, yeah.
Yeah, their goal is to see how much free media they can get out of that event every year, and it wins.
And we just gave them some.
Well, yeah, but I didn't mention the brand, but everyone knows who it's associated with, and now they have not only the hot dogs, but the protester dropping in a chokehold that'll be replayed for free as well. John McClain next.